Welcome to Two Teas in a Pod. I'm Kate Diaz, a Manchester math teacher and elected president of CEA, the Connecticut Education Association. We are Connecticut's largest teachers union, representing tens of thousands of professional educators across the state.
And I'm Jocelyn Delancey, a fifth grade teacher in Darien, elected vice president of CEA and president of CEF, the Connecticut Education Foundation, CEA's charitable arm.
In every episode, you'll hear thought-provoking interviews, as well as actionable tips and strategies that you can implement in your daily life. We'll have stimulating discussions to help you become a more informed and effective educator and advocate for your students and the teaching profession.
Thanks for spending some time with us today. Now let's jump right into Two Teas in a Pod.
All right, Jocelyn, this is going to be an exciting day. We have Gail Jordan from the Bloomfield Public Schools. She is not only a local president, she is also an interventionist at the elementary school, which God bless you, Gail, because that is a lot of knowledge to have to run down at once.
Thank you
so much for joining us. But today, we're going to tackle the issues of the day, which are recruitment, retention, how to get teachers, and once you have them, how do you keep them? Yeah. How are you, though? Let's check in
with you first. I'm well. Thank you for having me. I'm doing really well. I was just telling Jocelyn that things are coming in nice and slow and easy, so it hasn't been like a mayday moment yet.
That's exciting.
Yes, things are going
great.
Do you
think like tomorrow anything could happen and it could be mayday?
Yes, it could be. I feel like it's the jack in the box, like
Now, are your students back or did they?
Tomorrow. They will be back tomorrow. So today, yesterday was convocation and then teachers had the afternoon to work in their classrooms. Today was professional development all day, and then tomorrow students are back.
And so you're living the life of many of our educators across the state, enjoying the powerful professional development that is offered prior to the school year, which happens in varying degrees.
Okay.
No sarcasm intended there, but really looking forward to getting to work and down to the business of educating our beautiful children in the state of Connecticut. But it has not been a quiet summer. So talk to me about what it's been like dealing with sort of the turnover, the recruitment. How many positions did Bloomfield have open this summer?
So we ranged anywhere between like 10 and 20 openings with people leaving and resigning from Bloomfield. The biggest areas of need have been originally special ed. Luckily, we have those most of those positions filled.
You are fortunate.
But math, world language and science are huge areas of need, and I feel like they always have been.
Yeah, they have, and you're not alone. I mean, I think it's a highly competitive time to be a teacher in those areas, and you know, I think one of the things that's pushing is people doing something that is very unusual in education, and that is district hopping.
Yeah, that's been huge, and I'm thankful to Jocelyn for the exit survey that she's created. Hopefully we can get some really great data from that as to why people are leaving.
Right.
I can only assume as of right now. I know through conversations, money has been a huge pull from district to district. And then like specifics about contracts and what supports teachers are seeing within the contracts have been huge reasons as to why people are leaving.
Interesting.
So I know that you were saying that some of the things we have kind of long-term consequences to some of our previous contract negotiations and that boards need to be aware of, you know, the impact of a salary freeze or a step freeze for their teachers, right? So if you're in Bloomfield and you've been a teacher who's experienced a step freeze, you could have 15 years of experience and only be getting really credit for 10 years of experience.
Correct.
And then go to another district and get your full 16 years of credit.
Correct.
And I think that that's something that a lot of teachers see and go, oh, I can actually be compensated at the level that is fair for me and not have a consequence of those previous contract negotiations.
Right. And those contract negotiations have like negative impact twofold, because not only is it having teachers leave, but then it's a huge challenge for us to get great teachers into district.
Right, because there is
because
a discount.
We have, right, and in our contract specifically, we have not only step, but years of experience, because I shouldn't be penalized for staying in district for all 16 years. And then another teacher comes from another district that's been teaching for 16 years and they get placed on top step.
Right. And so a lot of contracts, you're right, a lot of contracts that have suffered freezes. My hometown had that issue as well. And our contract, it took me 17 years to go 12 steps because we had five freezes. Right. And you're right, the long-term consequence means that our steps actually don't align with years of experience. And we have to have sort of language that associates step and year, and it's a mess. And it means that a teacher with many, many years of experience ends up on a different step than they anticipated. Mm-hmm. And so it creates confusion and challenge. So let's say simply that freezes are bad. Yes, right. Everyone agree?
Agreed.
I think it's safe to say freezes are bad. It's a no-go. And certainly in the current climate, I cannot imagine any district in their right mind that would advocate for a freeze.
Right.
I would imagine they would have no teachers by the time that was out, because it is, for one of the first times in my 20-plus year career, it is a marketplace for educators.
Mm-hmm. It's very competitive. Yep. And I will say, you know, kudos to Bloomfields that in our last negotiations, we were able to really show this as being a very big issue, and we were able to create a contract that is for 3 years, and each year we are moving step. And so in speaking to the new teachers that we did recruit this year, being able to be like, rah, rah, hooray, because you're coming in at a really great time right now,
right,
because you will move step every year for these next 3 years.
Now, let's go pie in the sky for a moment, though, because this is one of the things I think we need to do more of. We are in a moment where everyone sees the pressing need for educators, mm-hmm, and there's a real quandary about, well, what do we do? What do we do? And some of it is making sure that our contracts have, you know, movement on the salary schedule, absolutely. But I think there's more, right? I think there's deeper that we need to go. We need to have some real conversations about all the ways that we can support educators. And during the last legislative session, we talked about the pandemic pension credit. We're bringing that back. We're refining that proposal. But that's, again, just a one-stop thing. Mm-hmm. So I think, what are some things that you would get excited about, Gail?
So I think we need to start thinking more of the teacher as the whole person and really looking at all the different aspects of life in which a teacher would need support, because we are, some of us are mothers and fathers, we have children, and we have, you know, we're in need of homes and things of that nature. So really taking a look at what other supports can be placed to help the teacher even outside of the school walls.
Right.
So as we've, you know, discussed previously, maybe looking into housing credits,
right,
or maybe different kinds of tax breaks that could be utilized for each teacher.
Yeah.
So really looking at the teacher, like I said, as a whole person.
Go big picture, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I know Jocelyn's favorite topic is to talk about school districts buying houses and using it for discounted housing for new educators. That's going to be, you're going to see like the Jocelyn Delancey School for Teachers in every town if she can help it, or housing for teachers.
Well, I just think, you think about commuting, you think about bad weather, how great would it be to have teachers have easy, accessible, affordable housing in the communities that they live in so that they could be able to be present and available at school when they need to be there.
Do you think Darien will sign up first?
I don't know. I mean, they do
this
have...
This is exciting.
They do have...
They have an island.
They do. No, I mean, I do think... I will say that Darien does do some tremendous things to support their teachers.
Listen, but I'm
housing,
not really joking.
Affordable housing in Darien would be
for
great.
For educators?
Yeah.
Can you imagine? You know, you start to look at places that where housing is really not affordable, and either working through credits or potentially building in systems that support. And really, it's that early educator, right? Mm-hmm. When you're making sort of the low end of the scale,
right,
you're still paying off your student loans.
Right.
You have all of those kind of pressures you're navigating. It would be an interesting experiment to see if we could really make something like that happen. Maybe
and
Bloomfield's a good place to do that.
I would love it. And just think of how that would bolster the community, the fact that your teachers are really and truly a part of your community now. They live within your community.
No, I think that makes it easier for us to support students at sporting events or theater events, arts festivals.
Yeah, right.
And it gives you an opportunity to really invest in a community and be a part of it and understand the perspective.
All right. I love it. We're going to put affordable housing on the list of things. And Jocelyn's going to spearhead that. She's very passionate about it.
I think, too, Gail, you said something about Bloomfield's contract that I thought was really interesting, because on top of the whole teacher outside of the classroom and our salaries and our compensation, our day-to-day work life is really important. And
you said
that Bloomfield has caseload numbers for special education teachers. Can
which
you
is
talk
unique.
A little bit about
that
how
is
that,
wonderful.
How that supports a teacher's day?
So really and truly, when you are looking, Bloomfield is unique. We have a very high caseload number. I'm not sure if there's a sign somewhere that says, you know, if your child is in, you know, needs special education, please come to Bloomfield. We do an amazing job. But what we noticed in past years is what most schools and districts are noticing is that there is an increase in right. students that need additional services and supports. So we were able to, I want to say 2 contracts ago now, get language put in that initially said caseload size of 16 and or 100 hours.
Oh, nice, with the hours, because some yes. kids, one size does not fit all in special education.
Correct.
For sure.
Correct.
You know, you can have one student that requires substantially more support time.
Right.
And another that doesn't. So,
we have since transitions actually to language that simply states 16 students because the issues that we actually started having with that 100-hour caseload size was the discussion of the special ed teachers are the ones developing the IEPs.
So
I think with taking that 100 hours off, it was making the special ed teachers look a little bit more carefully at how they are assigning hours. So as of right now, it's a special ed caseload size of 16 students. If you are a special ed teacher that has self-contained students, so we have like life skills programs
yep, yep.
at each school, those special ed students, that case size is 12. So it's been very helpful to help the teachers be able to manage a bit better because depending on how many students yeah. you have is how thin your spread.
Well, so yeah, and honestly, this has played out in a very interesting way.
Mm.
You started off by talking about the teacher shortage.
Yeah.
And what is one area that Bloomfield
oh, yeah.
is unique? Almost every district I have spoken to that is sitting with openings is sitting with special education openings.
Right.
And so it's not an accident. I'm sure among the special ed teachers, word is out that there is a cap,
mm-hmm.
that your expectations will be maybe hopefully more reasonable, right? I'd
right.
knock on wood, but it'll make weird noises.
Yeah.
but, you know, I think that that's a really powerful statement about the role of the special education teacher and what we can honestly expect them to do.
Right. And the special ed director at Bloomfield is amazing. She does
a
really great job. Yeah, she does a really great job for her team and advocating for them and working with the union. So,
well, we love that. That's what we like to hear. Yeah, shout out to that because sometimes we shout out in a not nice way to people because they're not nice to us. So we always like to highlight the winners.
Yes. She's just great.
Well, that's good to hear.
Yeah, so we've covered financial implications. We've covered some workday implications. Are there any other things that districts could be or should be doing to kind of maintain or entice teachers to either come to their districts or stay in their districts?
I think really and truly just how they show their appreciation or acknowledgement of what teachers are doing. I myself, as a new LP, on my monthly newsletter, plan on starting on the backside of my newsletter just a spotlight of a teacher from each school.
Yep.
Just because I don't feel like teachers feel appreciated.
Many teachers don't feel seen.
Right.
They feel like they invisibly walk through their building.
Right.
And that they do a great job. And every now and then somebody might see it, but it feels very rare. Right. And the exception rather than the rule.
And in the business world, I feel like people get monetary incentives all the time.
Right.
Right? I talk to my friends that work for Bank of America and all of these other places, and they're like, oh, I got a bonus for this, and
right.
I got a bonus for that, and I got a bonus for this. And, you know, in the teacher world, our bonuses are, oh, look at the light bulb came on in Johnny's head, and that's like my, you know, he had that aha moment, and that's what we take.
Oh,
but
no,
we
Gail,
need more
Gail,
than
the
that.
The bonus is that you get more students.
Correct. Correct. Right?
You're really good. You
right.
know what you need? You
right.
need 3 more students.
Right.
But you're, you know, we're, and again, you know, teachers aren't really the pat on the back crowd by
right.
and large. Many of them feel very uncomfortable, but it's why I think acknowledging the work that gets done and normalizing saying, gosh, we're really excited to have you.
Mm-hmm.
And we're really proud that these right. are the teachers and building a climate of appreciation. You know, when we all think back, right? Like I know we'd all as teachers talk about this all the time. When did we feel our best, right?
Mm-hmm.
When was that like, oh, this is the best job ever.
Right.
And it usually was when I was working in a climate of, you know, uplifting,
right.
where either my colleagues integrated that and like high-fived you and were like, my God, that lesson was great. Mm-hmm. And there was this climate of appreciation around me.
I think also inclusivity is an important aspect of that, right? True. Including the teachers in the decision-making, in the voice of the school, in mm-hmm. the building of community initiatives and in academic initiatives, you know, making sure that the teacher voice is heard, seen, appreciated, and that teachers have that leadership right. ability, you know, not to be necessarily a building principal or an assistant principal, but to lead within the building and right. have that acknowledgement of, you know, you're an expert in your field, you know what you're doing. Right.
And being treated like a professional. We just had that conversation at PD today where the woman giving the PD said to us, you know, that we should take the curriculum as it is, but, you know, model it to fit your classroom. You know your students best. If you think you need to, you know, take out a lesson or include an additional lesson, please do that. And people looked at me as the interventionist and was like, Gail, make sure that, you know, the higher ups know that we were told this here.
Right.
And that's sad that they think that I need to actually make sure that they're treated like professionals.
Right. And that affirm that. Yeah. Right. But you're not alone. I think if, you know, when you said that story about that PD, I think about literally every school I've visited across the state. That was when we were down in Stamford for welcoming. Trish Condua was the one who kind of affirmed the new teachers and said, you need to know when to abort the lesson.
Yeah.
And you need to trust your skills as an educator that says, oh, no, things are not going well.
Right.
I need to pivot. I need to change this. And I think, you know, it's a little bit sad, you're right, that we have built a profession where people are nervous about taking that liberty and taking that as a basic expectation. So I think it's really a powerful reminder that however we're treated, you know, that autonomy, that uplift. When you talked about your special ed supervisor, you talked about how inclusive they were, mm-hmm. how supportive. Those teachers feel like they have the autonomy to do what they need to do
right.
if they have a supervisor that backs them.
Right.
And I think, you know, the moral to that story is leadership matters.
Right. And I think our administrators need to be given credit for their ideas too and mm-hmm. need to be listened to when they bring up issues that their teachers are telling them
right.
that even it's a trickle down effect.
Absolutely.
Really and truly is what it comes down to.
Because culture.
Right. If the administrators are having the kibosh put on them, you know, when they're bringing issues, then they're obviously going to, you know, try to minimize what their teachers are saying when the teachers are talking to them. So it really is an issue all over. How do you treat your administrators?
Yep. Again, it's the culture of the organization.
Right.
Gail, we really appreciate you coming in here today. I mean, we could spend probably 4 more hours kind of diving into the ways, but I think for me, what my takeaway here today is that things are tough, but they're not hopeless.
Correct.
And those are very different things. And so amidst sort of the challenges, there are hope and there is opportunity. And those are exciting things.
And I think, like you said, people just need to talk to the people on the ground, talk to the teachers,
yes.
listen to their feedback. You obviously cannot make everyone happy, but there's always a majority
True.
Sound. You know what I mean?
Mm.
Think of what's the majority telling you?
Right.
And go with that.
And I'm going to say to end it all up for today is that we have creative teachers. We have a lot of solutions to this problem that we could really look into, be creative about, and be inspired by. So I'm going to leave it with, if we take care of our teachers, they can take care of our students.
110%. Yes.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
We want to thank all of our members for all you do and for listening to the latest edition of Two Teas in a Pod.
For more education talk, subscribe to Two Teas in a Pod and find us at CEA.org/podcast or wherever you get your podcasts.
Like what you heard? Share a podcast with your friends and colleagues and spread the word. Because we are
stronger together.